views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
Hi, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and boy, it is my pleasure to be a part of your afternoon this afternoon. For those of you that are listening East Coast time, and I guess it's afternoon for those that are listening West Coast time as well. This is Chuck Gallagher, and you know, on Straight Talk Radio, we have had a variety of guests. Those of you that regularly tune into the show, you know that we talk about all kinds of topics. We've talked about education with Dr. Nito Quibane. We've talked certainly about ethics. Scott McCain has been on talking about creating distinction. We've had all kinds of speakers and authors and wonderful guests talking about some really, really unique topics. And of course, because it's called Straight Talk, we tend to get right to the point. And today is going to be interesting, though. For those of you that are listening, let me say this on the front end. Stay tuned. You will not hear another show like this show. My guest today is Valda Ford. Valda, it says, is a self-proclaimed daughter of the South and one of the most intellectually disarming and humorous presenters on leadership, privilege, and cultural competency in the nation. And it's my honor to be a friend of Valda's. She and I actually are both together in the National Speakers Association Carolina chapter. And I guess the best thing I can say is, as we begin the process of starting on this radio show, let me tell you what the topic is going to be, because you won't want to miss this. Valda's new venture, I guess the best way to put it would be, is a program called Sex is Not for Sissies. Yes, you heard that correctly. Sex is not for sissies. Now, let me tell you, for those that are listening, this will be an appropriate show for those who are listening via the radio, and yet it will be probably one of the most informative shows that you will ever hear, and I am so excited. Valda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Chuck. It's my pleasure to talk about sex on the radio.
You know, I've really been anticipating this show because there are so many different places that we can go and things that we can talk about, but start me off with a little background, if you will, about where did this Sex is Not for Sissies come from?
The way it started is I was contracted a few years ago to address sexually transmitted diseases and infections in young people in a specific place in the Midwest. The numbers were terrible. There was not good information getting out. And as I started working with the young people to try to decrease their incidence of disease and unwanted pregnancy, I would speak with the parents to explain to them what was going to happen, what we were talking about, so they could say yes or no. But every time I would tell the parents what I was talking to with the youth, they would say, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I thought, well, how could they know it? Because if their background was like my background, they probably got the talk from my mother that said, just keep your knees closed and your dress down. Now, that might work sometimes, but when your knees get tired, what do you do then?
You know, Valda, okay, that reminds me of something, and I have to tell you this because it just is one of those things. You have these moments in life that, you know, you'll never forget. Sometimes they just go out of mind temporarily, but I remember as a young kid going to Atlanta, and we were in some high traffic area, and there was this kiosk, and I didn't know what a kiosk was at the time, but it said that there was this foolproof contraceptive. And here I am. I'm probably 12, 13-ish, and I'm wondering, what's this foolproof contraceptive? And, of course, at that age, you're a little embarrassed to just go up and read, you know. So I kept circling the kiosk, and I'd get a few words at a time, and I looked, and I thought, that's the oddest thing, because it looks like a sponge. And finally, I read it, and it said, put this behind your left knee, put your right knee in front of it, and squeeze as hard as you can.
You'll never get pregnant that way.
I thought to myself, okay, I got had on that one. Now, look. Let's do this because obviously we have several breaks that we're going to have to be dealing with. But I'm interested, before we really get started, so that the folks who are listening have an idea of who you are. Tell us a little bit about your background so that we can put in context why you're being called in to talk about sexually transmitted diseases and so forth.
Okay. I happen to be a registered nurse with over 30 years of experience. I did my master's thesis on HIV policy. I have a master's in public health from Carolina. And when I did that, I was looking at the silly laws that get passed because of hysteria around HIV. Unfortunately, I also have some young people in my life who were affected by HIV and who subsequently died. As it is now, we have more where people are going to be in a chronic illness state with HIV, but still 15,000 people a year die. And what I found out as I was doing this kind of talking, I would talk to many age groups. And there was a 74-year-old woman who came up to me to say that she had a new boyfriend. And I thought, well, I'm not sure what that has to do with me. But she said, you're talking about having love in your life, enjoying your life, and that we are sexual creatures. She says, well, I'm worried about what my boyfriend is asking me. I think maybe what he's saying might be illegal or immoral, or I don't know if I should be doing it. So, of course, I leaned in closer and said, well, what is he asking you for? She said, the same things that almost every person would be having in a sexual relationship, but because she'd been married to the same man for over 50 years and he had died 2 years previously, she had no idea of what normal is for most people who are in a sexual relationship. She had a one-note wonder. Now she had a guy who was performing a symphony, and she was a little bit concerned. But as I spoke with her, I found that she was one of the most vulnerable people I've ever met as far as sexual literacy, the understanding of what's important to them. And the more I talked to people who were 40 and above, and looked at the statistics from Centers for Disease Control, I found that they were in the highest risk group right now for getting HIV as a new disease. And I thought someone should be doing something about it.
Now, one of the things that I think we need to do as we talk through this, the proliferation of HIV is what started you down this path of openly talking about sex, sexual mores, what's normal, what's not, and so forth. Yet, this show isn't solely going to be about that, just so people that are listening will know, because one of the things that I have found true about Valda is, if you want to know the answer to the question, just ask the lady, because she is not going to hold back. So for the if the 50 Shades of Grey folks who are listening thinking, I wonder what they're going to be saying on the radio, we're going for it, because there are a lot of things that I think that we can talk about. But to start the process, Valda, you said that the group that is most highly exposed today, vulnerable, good word, for the AIDS virus are people who are over 40. And somehow, I'm a person over 40, so somehow in my head, I just think that shouldn't be an issue. So talk to me a little bit about why it is that folks over 40 are in the highest risk group.
Well, let me qualify to say they're not in the highest risk group. They are, I think, in the most vulnerable group, okay, because no one is talking to them about their risk. There are plenty of people and lots of money going towards talking to men who have sex with men, people who are IV drug abusers about HIV. There's some information out there for women. However, people who are in the 40-plus and especially 50-plus, just imagine, if you learned about sex during the Make Love Not War years of the 1960s, the only thing you had to worry about was what? If you got the clap, then you got a shot. If you got pregnant, you got shipped off to somebody else's relatives and your aunt had a baby after that, miraculously. That was the state of what we learned. A woman who would have condoms in her purse would have been considered, what, a tramp. And so, therefore, a person who is 50-plus has not learned to negotiate condom usage, does not even understand that he or she needs to talk about getting tested. Therefore, they're thinking they're in the perfect time in their lives. Women are postmenopausal. They don't have to worry about the curse every month. Men are probably understanding that this is still a pretty good time for them sexually. So you've lost all of your inhibitions. The kids are out of the house. You have time to get naked again and play around. And guess what? If you have a new person in your life, you might not understand that just because they're older, they're not necessarily wiser. So maybe they've been tripping the light fantastic still in their 50s and are putting themselves at risk and you at risk if you don't know what to talk about.
Now, okay, so as a guy over 40, let me be just kind of practical here. Number one, I would make the assumption if I were, sexually engaged with someone that I was unfamiliar with, not my wife, but I would make the assumption that if I'm post 40 or post 50, well, if I were going to have the disease, I probably would have it, and therefore I'd know it and probably be responsible enough not to have sex with someone. You don't tend to see, unless you're in a high-risk group, you don't tend to think as a heterosexual person who has been fundamentally monogamous, I'll get it out in a minute, that the risk should be that high. So where does that come from?
Well, that is the big part of the problem. You have people who are saying, well, they expect a person with HIV to look a certain way. They expect them to have certain behaviors that would put them in the high-risk category, as in IV drug use or men having sex with men. But here's the thing. HIV doesn't have a look to it. And it takes as long as 7 years for the average person to develop symptoms enough that they would be tested for it. So if you were having sex, kind of out there a lot, and you're 32 years of age, then by the time you're 40, might be the first time you're actually showing some symptoms. And if your physician or nurse practitioner hasn't been asking you, have you been tested, or if that's not in a part of what you would do, you could have HIV and be passing it on along. So it's not intentional. There's a very small percentage of people out there who are just being mean and terrible and knowingly giving HIV to other partners. The average person does not know. They don't have any clue because they're expecting, like most diseases, that they're going to have symptoms. But unfortunately, most diseases don't have symptoms in the early stages.
This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and this has been a sobering segment because obviously we've been talking with Val DeFord, who is absolutely a joy to talk with and who knows her stuff, along with her new program, Sex is Not for Sissies. Now, when we get back from our break, we're going to talk about some other segments of this outside of disease control that I think you might want to stay tuned for. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. Stick with us, and we'll be back in just a minute. Well, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and we're back from the break. My guest is Val DeFord, and oh my goodness, this has been an interesting conversation. Her new program is called Sex is Not for Sissies, and while the first segment was fairly sobering, where we were talking about the issues of sexually transmitted disease, HIV, there are some things that we do need to discuss that I think are going to be, well, fascinating to those of you that listen. Val, you said that there was a 74-year-old lady who came up to you, and she apparently had been married for 50-ish years, and her husband died, and now she had a new boyfriend. Tell us a little bit about some of the stories you hear, because I'm 57. I hope to be sexually active at 74, 75, or whatever it happens to be. But obviously, there are a lot of people who believe that, you know, once you pass a certain age, you're not there anymore.
Well, that's the good thing, that we know that as long as you're alive, sex is possible, as long as you're physically fit and able to do so, which is one of the reasons we need to get out and do all that running and eat all that bran. But this woman was an example of many people who come up to me after I've talked about just living well, and they will move right to sex because somehow I've said one word that's allowed them to do that. And they will ask questions like, what does an orgasm feel like? And I am thinking, oh my God, I'm so sad that you don't know this already. But let me tell you what the continuum is for that. Men are kind of lucky. They have this obvious evidence of what's happening, but women may not. There are many of them who have never been satisfied sexually, and now they don't even know how to tell their partner. That has always been terrible, whether male or female. How do you go back to tell someone, you know, you're about the lousiest lay I ever had, but you don't want to say that because then you don't have a relationship anymore. But how do you say, well, I was told as a young girl, and many women my age were told, just grin and bear it, child, just grin and bear it. So if you've been grinning and bearing it, but now you're recognizing that, maybe there is something positive that should be happening in my bedroom. The male and the female is going to benefit from this positivity and the change, but how do you tell them? So I have seminars where I talk to people about everything from being conscious in your decision-making about what you're going to do, when, with whom, and under what circumstances. Educated women are very frequently told that if you're educated over 50 and successful, that you're going to have a limited number of men available to you. So just deal with somebody else's husband, the gay guy who just gives you some relief periodically, or just take care of it yourself. And these are terrible things for women to be thinking about when they might start a new relationship, especially with the cougar age, when there are a lot of younger guys being involved with older women. And many older women think that, oh, I'm so proud that I have this 32-year-old stud who's taking care of me. They're afraid to ask them to be tested. But just from the pleasure side, all of us should have good, safe, enjoyable sex well into our 80s and 90s, as long as we're physically fit. We may have to decrease some of the acrobatics, but we can still have great and satisfying sex.
Okay, so let's talk about satisfying sex. You made the comment, you said, you know, if you're a man, there's obvious evidence, typically, of an orgasm. So I'm going to show my ignorance, you know, I may as well do that. Heck, this is Straight Talk Radio, so let's talk straight. But you speak as if it is not obvious that most women recognize what the experience is like of having an orgasm, one, and two, that somehow it's, I guess, the partner's responsibility to create that, whereas for the average man, most men probably don't figure that to be the case. You know, you can take matters into your own hands, so to speak. So help me understand why that seems to be such a difference between the genders.
Well, unfortunately for us women, we don't usually have the earth-shaking, shattering thing and the evidence that it has happened. We might feel something. But the orgasm for a woman can be anything from just a simple thing where there's a sigh, or there can be some screaming, hanging off the roof kind of thing going on. And when you have that kind of continuum, there is no standard by which we know it has happened. If you have one that's the hanging off the roof kind, there's not going to be any concern about that at all. But if you're disappointed because that's what the movies have shown us or television has sexualized, that's what it's going to be about, you might be disappointed, but your body isn't really disappointed. But you've convinced yourself that you should be. As a woman who got married very early, I was married at 17. This was during the Vietnam War. I thought I was doing something patriotic by marrying a Marine. Well, Let's just say it wasn't the best decision I ever made in my life. I have this wonderful son as a result. But I can tell you that for the first 7 years after I was married, I did not experience the pleasure of orgasm. It was later with another partner when I was convinced that I wasn't going to have one that was just something that they made up to sell products or to convince you that it was a good thing to be in the bedroom. And when I did, it was one of those, okay, this is what all the fuss is about. Now I get it. Yes, 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 yes. But before then, it was kind of like, okay, I'll do this. I got to do this. It's the only way you keep your relationship solid. And so if you're unfortunately one of those people who is not having it, but you're trying to keep your relationship together, you're just going to lie. Let's just say it. There's a whole bunch of faking going on, and it doesn't benefit anyone. If you are a man, many times as a younger man, it's just a natural thing that when things start to stand at attention, you just take it, as you said, into your own hands. And then if a young man has an ejaculation, then he's going to know the obvious, I did this and this happened. So it's the cause and effect. With a woman, there are many, many, many women, especially older women, who were taught, don't look down there, don't touch down there. And so they believe that masturbation is a terrible thing. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a rite of passage for young men, and it might be something that's terrible for women. You see the beginning of the disconnect right there.
Okay, so a lot of then what you're explaining to us is, I guess, how we're taught and how we're trained. I have to ask this then, just going along that particular line, it appears that society has changed. What people in their, well, I don't know your age, but I'm 57. So what people in their 50s and 60s were taught and experienced is probably far different than today what people in their teens and 20s experience. I'm assuming that a 20-year-old female is not going to have the same aversion to physical stimulation that perhaps you were taught as a teen or a 20-year-old.
Well, that's possible, but when I have my seminars, I have people from 18 to 80. That's how I approach it. If you're legal, you can come in. Other than that, you got to come with your mama, because I don't want anyone complaining about what I'm talking to their baby girl about. But what I find is that there are a lot of young people, specifically now with puberty starting so early. It can be as early as age 8. For those of you who are thinking about having the talk at age 12, you will be 4 years too late for girls and at least 3 years too late for most boys. So imagine this. Your body is telling you, all your hormones are released saying, make new small people. This is why we have all that happening, right? We're supposed to make small copies of ourselves that populate the world. If our bodies are saying do it, but our brains haven't been taught not to, that's a recipe for a disaster. But on top of it, even if we've been in this super sexualized society where we're told that it's good to have pleasure, it's good to do this, young people still don't know what they're doing. They're typically going to fumble around and make a big mess of things. There's a lot of pressure on young women to do things like have oral sex in groups and out in public just to prove that you're popular, which, of course, are now labeled as being easy the same way they were back 40 years ago. So, unfortunately, these young girls aren't learning about pleasure. They are just pleasuring someone for the most part. And if you look at the percentage of young girls who will give oral sex versus young boys who will give oral sex, it's a bad differential. Like 80% of girls might do it because they're asked, and about 20% of boys will do it. So you see, it takes, for 80% of women, it takes direct clitoral stimulation, usually for about 20 minutes, in order to have an orgasm. But if you're having intercourse in a typical missionary position, then a guy, especially a young guy, might last 2, 3, 4, 5, let's say hopefully 10 minutes. And that means that the woman hasn't been stimulated enough, even if it's indirect stimulation by having their pelvises bump, then she's not going to be satisfied. And he's not going to be satisfied. It may be that she will take it into her own hands and either use her hands or use some type of device, but it's still not the norm like we would think it is based on what you see on television.
We're talking about sex is not for sissies, and I think for those of you that are listening to this conversation, you understand why that is, and yet it's amazing that here we are, you know, in 2014, and we still don't know the depth of what we need to know in order to enjoy sex, and yet at the same time be intelligently responsive to that flood of hormones going out and telling us to make little people. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. My guest is Valda Ford. She is a registered nurse, self-proclaimed daughter of the South, one of the most intellectually disarming and humorous presenters on leadership, privilege, and cultural competency, and her new program is Sex is Not for Sissies. When we get back, we're going to talk about some medical issues and conditions. Because having been diagnosed with prostate cancer some now 9 years ago, obviously there are a lot of people that have challenges from a sexual perspective or could have, and that's a conversation that needs to take place as well. Stick with us. This is Chuck Gallagher on Straight Talk Radio. Well, we're back from the break. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And boy, this has been an enlightening. I mean, I've already learned some things that that I didn't know. And, you know, I thought I was at least reasonably educated when it comes to issues of sex. But my guest is Valda Ford, and her program is Sex is Not for Sissies. And we happen to be off-site this time. Most of our shows are recorded via Skype, but we happen to be at the National Speakers Association convention in San Diego, California. So if you hear a little noise in the background, that's speakers. They talk a lot. Valda and I happen to be at the National Speakers Association convention 2014 here in San Diego, California. It is a beautiful day outside, and we've had a very enlightening discussion up to this point in time with her new program, Sex is Not for Sissies. And Valda, before we go forward, because this is a program that really spans ages, you said 18 to 80, talk to us a little bit about how people can connect with you to get some of these questions answered, because I know there's some pent-up questions that are out there.
Well, the best way to reach me is either email valda@valdaford.com, valda@valdaford.com, or by phone. 336-870-5571. That's 336-870-5571. I have a website, sexisnotforsissies.com, that you can contact me through that box as well.
You know, Valda, I mentioned this before we got into this segment, in our last segment. I was diagnosed at the age of 47 with prostate cancer. And I'll never forget the doctor coming in and saying, "You have prostate cancer. Now, there's four things we can do." And then he starts to proceed to tell me what the treatments would be. And he said, with any of these treatments, he said, there are certain side effects that could exist. One would be incontinence, and the other one would be loss of sexual function. Now, I'm sitting here, and I have to tell you, I'm sitting in this doctor's office, and it's like, number one, you told me something that I didn't want to hear at 47. And then you tell me that I might pee on myself for the rest of my life and not be able to have sex. And then he wanted to schedule surgery in 2 weeks. And I'm just like, dude, time out. I just need a little processing time on this. This is a little challenging. And once I did some preliminary research, I concluded that based upon what we knew at the time, I was not going to die from prostate cancer. So therefore, that being out of the way, then the issue was, wait a minute, I might not be able to have sex for the rest of my life. I didn't sign up for that gig. And it's really different for women and men, because for women, when you're faced with issues of breast cancer, women will openly share. That's why there's all the little pink ribbons everywhere. But men don't seem to want to talk about the issues that can take place with loss of sexual function or the possibility of loss of sexual function when it comes to prostate cancer. And I know as a nurse you've had to have seen what takes place and how things happen in doctor's offices, and I'm amazed by that. Any comments?
Well, number one, women have gotten better at talking about breast cancer, but unfortunately, there's still a lot of women dying of breast cancer because they do keep it to themselves and wait a long time to get diagnosed officially. For men, I talk to men all the time who say they're not having a prostate exam when they go into the doctor's office. They say, nobody's sticking their finger up in my butt. And I said, okay, look, takes 30 seconds to do the exam. That gives you another year of being relatively confident that all is good. Now, would you give up 30 seconds for a prostate check? Because we know that having prostate exams at age 50 usually and above for white males and 40 and above for African-American males is a very good idea, because prostate cancer is one of the cancers that is the most likely for the person to be around 5, 10, 20, 30 years later. Now, the issues about sometimes we as healthcare professionals really don't get the fact that this is a big old shock and we need to wait for a few minutes and let people process. But what people come to me about as it relates to prostate is that wives will say, my husband had prostate surgery and now we're trying to figure out what to do. When will he be able to have sex again? Or will he be able to have sex again? That's all relative to which procedure you get, whether it's a surgical, whether it's radiation, and of course, the skill of the surgeon. So anyone out there who's been talked to about having the illness should definitely do due diligence and check out the skill of the surgeon, because that's going to make a difference in your quality of life. Now, the most important thing I tell women is, if you have a guy in your life who's going through prostate surgery, just be supportive. If he all of a sudden out of the blue 8 months from now has an erection and he says, baby, I'm on the way home, you say, I'll be ready. You don't say, what are you talking about? I'm at work, I'm in a meeting, I got to go to a Boy Scout meeting. No, 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 no. The thing here is the psychological effect for a man not to be able to have an erection again is shattering, because we're all tied up with our genitalia. We are. And unfortunately, I've had men tell me, if I can't have an erection, just shoot me in the head. And I hope that no one feels like that. But if we don't have a supportive partner at home when that's happening, then when the physical part is happening and the psychological part is not matching it, then you could just end up with a whole world of trouble. A woman who has a hysterectomy sometimes is going to be happier about the fact that it's gone, is not going to have a menstrual cycle anymore, and then might be more willing to be sexually active because she doesn't have to worry about some things. That is when your ovaries are not taken out because you're still producing hormones. So there are a lot of things to worry about and wonder about, but the most important thing is, if you have any kind of question, get yourself to a doctor. People are dying unnecessarily because they're ashamed of it, they're worried about it, they think they're going to have a negative outcome, so they don't even check, and it definitely will be worse when you don't check about it.
Yeah, I think the easy thing to say is, in my case, I found out by accident. I was interested in the pill Propecia, because supposedly it keeps your hair from falling out, and, you know, at 47, I was all about wanting to keep my hair. I used to have a 4-head, then it went to a 5-head, it's going to a 6-head now, I don't know, but anyway. But the doctor said, well, you got to have a blood test. I don't like needles, okay? Let's just be honest. As a nurse, most men don't like needles. So I don't like needles. I'm petrified of them, quite frankly. But, you know, it was worth it to get the pill. And then she says, well, we've got to do a PSA test. Yeah, well, what's that? Well, prostate-specific antigen. You know, it's just giving us a baseline. Well, my baseline was higher than what it should have been at my age. And that's what caused, ultimately, the process to proceed to determine that I had prostate cancer. But in the interest of transparency, because I believe in being transparent, I'm transparent when I talk about my ethics program, so why not when we talk about sex? I ended up having surgery. It was robotic surgery, and I agree with you 100%. Skill of the surgeon is going to get you a better result. And fortunately, nerves were spared, which would allow for an erection to take place. But he said, you know, it could be 12 months to a year. I mean, 12 months to 18 months. And sporadically, from time to time, I would experience an erection. I also found out, since we're talking about sex is not for sissies, that you don't have to have an erection to have an orgasm as a man, which I was shocked by. But apparently, and you probably know more about this, so I'm going to turn it back to you, but apparently the whole sensation, although for a guy we think it's in our genitalia, the reality is it's in the brain. It's a function of the brain mechanism firing, and I don't know, to me it's what people call their third eye, and that's the thing that's like, that's the off-the-wall kind of, when it happens. But the reality was, is it took about a year before there was normality to an erection. And it was never the same as if I was 17, but then again, I was 48. I wasn't 17, so I needed to give that up as well. But I'm fascinated, and I'm interested in what you've experienced from this, because I'm fascinated. I've interviewed a little over 125 men and their wives, if they were married or they were willing to talk. And most women seem to be, I got three responses. Let's put it this way. Response number one, I'm there for my man. I'm going to walk with him through this. That's what we're about. Response number two, thank God. Maybe I won't have to put up with this again. It's okay if we never have sex. Really? And response three was, well, you know, if he can't perform, I just don't know about this. What have you experienced?
Well, definitely those are the three kind of responses I hear. Now, the first one, and I'm going to stay by my man, which is great. That's every relationship should be like that. The second one, well, thank God it's over because I never wanted it anyway, might also be more like, well, I never was getting what I needed. And unfortunately, they never knew how to ask for it. So now they're thinking, well, great, I have just been putting up with it. But if they had some talk along the way or came to one of my Sex is Not for Sissy seminars, then they would be learning the ways to ask for what they actually want. And the third set, there are actually people who do split up when there's any type of catastrophic event that's happening. It can be having sick children. It could be having cancer. It could be the loss of a really superior income. Those things do split families up. So that's unfortunate, but that's the reality, and those are the three. What I've seen so far with the people I've spoken with has been more of people really hanging on in there and trying to work it through. And if they can get some counseling as well so that the man understands that he can help give pleasure to the woman without actually having intercourse. There are some people who have what's called outer course anyway, and they never do penetrate each other. And guess what? If 80% of women are obtaining pleasure not from intercourse, they're going to be okay while you're getting to be okay. And if you've helped them achieve pleasure over and over and over again, then guess what? They're going to be there for you later. And those who were thinking that, thank goodness it's over, might discover for the first time. I know many women in their 40s, 50s, and even 60s who've never had an orgasm, who've never had a partner who was worried about their pleasure or didn't know they weren't receiving pleasure, which is unfortunate. And sometimes you have people who come apart in their relationship because in the 40s or 50s when hormones change and some of the things we're looking at as to whether or not it is reasonable and if people are excited because those brain chemicals are being released and the whole 90% of sex is in the head anyway. But you do have that 10% that might be physical. But if you are a person who's going through menopause or menopause or andropause and your hormones aren't releasing the same way, for a man you might not have an erection as often or as long. You might not be able to complete or start sex. For a woman, it may be that she does not have the lubrication. And let's face it, that's how we determine if you're ready, is by checking lubrication status. So if you have less, if it doesn't last very long, then we might be thinking that you're not interested, or a man might think a woman isn't interested, where it's simply her body doing it to her. Her mind still wants it, but her body is not producing. And that might mean you need some kind of supplementation, but that should all be done strictly under a doctor's care because there are some side effects that can happen with supplementation. But these are things that happen. So all we have to do, though, as partners, is just listen to each other. And if you do have a partner who's saying, thank God it's over, then maybe ask why. And at the height of this, oh, my God, I might have cancer and I'm going to die thing, is not the time to be getting totally into relationships. But it might be an opportunity during the recovery time to find out how to get closer together. And when you're close physically, you release oxytocin, which is that I want to be with you forever chemical. It's the thing that makes you stay with one partner as compared to, say, dopamine, which is like, I need some pleasure and I need it now. So these are all chemicals that release. But all of this is what I talk about with people, because who has ever told us this stuff? No one.
You know, that's the fascinating thing. My guest is Val DeFord. This is Straight Talk, and this has been a show of Straight Talk in her new program, Sex is Not for Sissies. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back right after that from San Diego, California, with the NSA convention. And you can probably hear screaming in the background because there are a lot of people having a great time here. I am just thrilled that Val and I have been able to connect to bring you this very informative show. Well, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. My guest has been Val DeFord, and this has been an enlightening show. For those of you that listen to Straight Talk Radio on a regular basis, I think you will find this show has been unlike any others that we've had, because we have been talking about the issue of sex is not for sissies. Valda has put together a, I guess the best way to put it is a seminar series. She has a website, sexisnotforsissies.com. I encourage you to go there, because the biggest thing that I think we tend to find is people don't know what they don't know. And there's a lot of not knowing out there. There are a lot of people who want to not talk about this very important topic for whatever the reason may be. And if you don't know what you don't know, you're never going to find out. I think it's fascinating to look at and understand the perception from perhaps whenever you were a teenager, and you're right, hormones flowing and you're wanting to create little people, or at least
practice.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, practice. Practice creating little people. Let's hope the little people creating maybe a little bit down the road there, versus the people now who are the baby boomers, and you and I both fall into that category. And I don't know about you, but I look at myself and think, well, you know, I'm 57 and I can see physical changes in my body, but my mind still thinks, dude, I don't know, it's Woodstock, let's go out, let's listen to Led Zeppelin when music was great. You know, I'm sure our parents said the same thing about when Sinatra was singing. But we don't look at it the way our parents did. We look at being sexually active as long as that's possible, and of course our children go ooh, and it's quite funny. But tell us about the program. Tell us about Sex is Not for Sissies and how that can benefit people and where they can get that in their hometown.
Well, thank you. The thing about it is, I use the title Sex is Not for Sissies because when I was speaking with that 74-year-old woman I referenced earlier, she kept going the ew herself. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. Oh, no, oh, no. So I said, look, do you want the guy? Do you want to be in a relationship with him? Is he a keeper? And she said, yes. I said, well, you can come to some compromise. But remember, sex is not for sissies. Sometimes you have to put on the big girl panties and just keep on getting up. And so that kind of stuck. But what I found is when I would have seminars with women and talk to them about the things we've talked about, they would say, would you please talk to the guys? Because they need to know this, and maybe they'll take it from you, or I'll forget it, or I won't have the depth of knowledge. So I developed a seminar series. I do dinner and a show, basically, where people come together for about half a day. We have a great meal. They ask questions. I go through my CARES model, which is C-A-R-E-S, which means that every person who's having sex should know about conscious decision-making. You decide who, where, when, what, with whom, and under what circumstances, followed by A, an attitude adjustment. Because if you are an older person and you don't know about condoms, you need to know about condoms and your responsibility, male or female. Then you get to R, which is romantic anticipation. Too many times now, we've forgotten all about romance. And to me, romance is a great part. Romance is the best possible foreplay there ever was. And unfortunately, people are forgetting about that and just going to the act and wondering why they're not being satisfied, because there's so much more to that. Then the E is the educated experimentation. In this era of 50 Shades of Grey, there are a whole bunch of people who've shown up in the hospital with injuries and all sorts of bad things happening because they think that, oh, it's popular, let me go and allow someone to handcuff me and chain me to the floor or to the ceiling, whatever the case may be, whip me, flog me, dip me in ice, whatever the case, because they think, oh, this is what I need to do to be hip. I talk to people about educated experimentation. When was the last time you just did intimate touching? So you really got in touch with what you like, what your partner likes. And that's the easy discovery, so people know it without having to have that horrible conversation, without accusing each other of not being good or bad. But now you're rediscovering each other. And finally, if you do all of those things, then you'll have seriously satisfying, scintillating sex. And that's exactly what we want. And so in order to get me to do that, you either just call me up, send me an email, and tell me I would like to come to your seminar and webinars. I'm having the next seminar in Charlotte, North Carolina in September. I'm having a retreat in the Kansas City area, actually in Dearborn, on August the 8th through 10th. So if you want the intensive experience of 2 days, you can do that. Or if you want me to come to your town because you know you have a big group of women or you want to do some couples retreats, then just get in touch with me. I will be glad to set it up. I've done this in several states now, and it's my goal for this to be as well known as people know about what their normal blood pressure numbers are or what your normal blood sugar is or what your cholesterol is. Why don't we know this? This is the most obvious thing that we should all be well educated about. And for the most part, there's no topic about health that we're more ignorant about.
You know, it's fascinating that you say that because that really is true. And not to get off on a different subject, but there's a fella here who likewise, like to me, had prostate cancer. And he said, you know, if I go to talk to men, if I ask the average man, if there were 100 men, and I said, tell me what your odometer is within, you know, 1,000 miles, every man can tell you what their odometer number is. Now, tell me what your PSA number is, and half of them or better will not know or not even know what it stands for. So the fascinating question is why is a species would be we be willing to have something that is so significant in our life and yet be so ignorant about it? It's really amazing. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and Val DeFord is my guest, and you said something a minute ago. I lost the words.
Seriously satisfying scintillating sex.
Seriously satisfying scintillating sex. Oh, that just sounds good. I mean, that sounds like a book right there. Let me ask you a question. On the programs that you do, Sex is Not for Sissies, you said at one point that you had women's groups, and then you had, and the women were all clamoring to say, tell the men. And then you had couples groups. Which do you find more open and more effective?
Well, it's always fun to get with a group of women, especially if they had a couple glasses of wine. But even more importantly, all my seminars are set up so that questions can be asked and answered in a confidential and anonymous way, either using an audience response system or using index cards to send up questions. I found actually that the ladies were more open when their men were there, especially in sending me questions to ask, because they wanted those things discussed in front of the men. I was a little bit hesitant about doing it with men, but the first few times I did it when I had a cameraman and I had, say, a massage therapist there and other men, they would say, look, we need this too. Right now, I think it's pretty good that I could have either group there and it would be successful.
So as we wrap up today's program, Straight Talk, Sex is Not for Sissies. This is on Transformation Talk Radio, and this certainly could be transformative to the people that listen. I'm going to put you on the spot. Tell me three things that people need to know that generally they don't as we start to wrap up.
I would say three things that people don't know is that, number one, each person has the capability of having really good sex every time that they have sex, not just sometimes, but every time. Number two, that we are extremely and exceedingly ignorant about the things that our kids are doing. If you're a parent, and on the other side, what your parents are doing, because unfortunately right now, or fortunately for the elders, they're still having sex, but they're the most vulnerable because they're the most ignorant about the things we've talked about today. And finally, I think that we need to have a conversation about our bodies, that we need to be in touch intimately with our intimate parts. And we haven't been told that. There are people who come into the hospital all the time who've had prolapses. For those of you who don't know, that's a dropping of the uterus or the vagina or the bladder, usually through the vaginal canal. And they don't even know it. They've just been hurting and feeling badly. So the third thing is get to know your body intimately. Don't be ashamed of it. Even if it's older, guess what? It's still better.
You know, Valda, I have to say, I appreciate your willingness to bring this topic to the forefront. Valda is a part of NSA Carolinas, and I have to tell you, the first time I heard, you know, sex is not for sissies, it was like, wow. I mean, I've heard a lot of people, when you go up to a speaker and say, well, you know, what do you speak about? And they hem and haw, and boy, you were right out with it, and it was like, you go, girl, that is awesome. So for those of you that have been listening to the show, thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of Straight Talk Radio. This is Chuck Gallagher. My guest is Valda Ford, and I want to encourage you to go to sexisnotforsissies.com. That way, if you want to connect with Valda, talk with her, if you have a question, read the information that she puts out there, and probably most importantly, perhaps if it's a women's group, I tend to think they'll be at least more open to seeking your program, but look at the programs that she offers and see how that might work in your marketplace. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and we appreciate you listening each and every week. Next week, we will be back with another great show, and I promise you, since we have straight talk about subjects, it will be equally exciting. And Valda, thank you ever so much for your participation. Folks, this is Chuck Gallagher with Transformation Talk Radio, Straight Talk Radio, and we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Tune in each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher.